For NPR Music, you're connected to all songs considered. I'm Bob Boylan. So, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band turns 50 on June 1st. And what's being done to celebrate this pretty perfect ground-shaking record from the summer of 67? They've remixed the entire record. So why the hell would anyone remix one of the greatest albums ever? I went to New York City and met Giles Martin. Giles is the son of Beatles producer George Martin, who originally mixed the album. In fact, during George Martin's senior years, as his dad was losing his hearing, the 19-year-old Giles Martin was his father's ears. Giles helped with the mixes for the Beatles' Love Project. He came to our New York bureau in New York City with a laptop with the original mono version, stereo version, and now the 2017 stereo version of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Here's where I start the conversation.
As I've told people there are new mixes for Sgt. Pepper, everyone keeps saying to me, what? Why? And so I guess going into this, like, what is your philosophy? What are you thinking other than do no harm?
Yeah, I mean, actually, do no harm's an interesting concept because you kind of, that's not the way the Beatles think. You know, the Beatles, they like to take risks.
Right.
And my father and Paul and Ringo, and, you know, they've always instilled that. Push it as much as you can, you know, don't just sit back. I think why mix Sgt. Pepper's is a really good question. I mean, it's the most famous album of all time. It's not as though it sounded bad.
Right.
But if you think about when Sgt. Pepper's was made, which was 50 years ago this year, it was really designed for mono, and the band spent a lot of time over the mono mixers. And the mixers in those days were a performance. I mean, they were live, and the band did with my father, George Martin, and with Jeff Emmerich, they mixed Sgt. Pepper. And when the stereos were done, they were done very quickly. So no one listens to the monos.
That's right.
There's that reason why.
So weeks and weeks of work are put into the version that now nobody really knows.
Correct. All of the focus at the final of this, what was the longest album ever made at that stage? It wasn't actually that long. All the focus went into the monos, and no one ever listens to them. There's also a thing that, you know, when children and grandchildren are told about this album that changed the face of pop music, that made Roger Waters go and, you know, want to go and do Dark Side of the Moon, you don't want it to come on to come on a streaming service or a radio channel and sound old. Even though we use modern techniques, you know, we still use the old equipment. And so there's that. That's the kind of drive. And also, we live in a world where people just hear and they don't listen. And something
go
like,
deeper with that. What do you mean?
What I mean is music is ubiquitous. More people listen to music all the time, but they're doing other things. Sgt. Pepper's an album that takes your focus. And I think if you do something like do a remix, it suddenly people go, oh, Sgt. Pepper. Now, I don't mind if people go back and listen to the monos, but at least they're listening.
Yeah.
You know, they're not just hearing.
Play me something, the difference between the stereo that most people know and the stereo that Giles Martin
I'll start actually by playing the difference between the stereo that most people know and the mono they made.
Yeah.
Because what happened when they, you know, as I say, the band and my dad and Jeff, they mixed the monos, and there were specific notes they made onto how the monos would be mixed. So if I play you She's Leaving Home, which you all know, and it's that this is the stereo She's Leaving Home.
Wednesday morning,
it's a beautiful
at
song.
5 o'clock.
Now the mono
the day
is this.
Which is it's up a step or a half step?
Which is a half step up. It's a semitone up.
Just so, to begin with, let's let people listen a second.
Stairs to the kitchen.
You flip back.
Kitchen clutching.
So therefore, in the new mix, we now mix it like the band wanted, but in stereo.
The back door key, stepping outside, she is free.
And you really hear the bottom end of the strings here.
Well, this is the other thing, as we now can, we're going back to the early generations of tapes. Now, it's hard to explain, but my father had to record everything as a four-track, and then, so that means you can record four things onto one tape, and that was bounced to another four-track. What we do, and we've done it since I worked on the Love Project, the Love album and show, is we go back to the previous generation. So we're mixing off.
They exist.
They exist. They're at the Abbey Road vaults. And we're mixing off generations of tape that they never mixed off.
Wow.
So It's almost like a car that's come straight out of a paint shop. The tapes are glistening, and we're mixing off the tapes that have never been played. Because they, you know, if you're bouncing, I mean, if you take She's Leaving Home, which you just listened to, it was a four-track recorded with the strings, and they bounced that down and then recorded two vocals. So we're working off the original recording of the strings, not the second generation. So you get a much clearer, much more dynamic. So in this version of Sgt. Pepper, you're much closer to the band. I mean, when I first worked in Abbey Road, it was on an anthology of my dad, and I was about 19 years old, and I was my father's ears at that stage. I couldn't
because
believe
your dad was
my dad lost his hearing, yes, and I couldn't believe how close it was a day in life. I couldn't believe how close I felt to the music. Because recording technology hasn't actually got that much better. What was recorded in 67 sounds pure and crystal clear. There's not any hiss or anything. Mm-hmm. And that's what, with this version of Sgt. Pepper, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get you closer to the music as much as possible.
We didn't really explain why the pitch was different between the mono and the stereo. What happened there?
Well, Sgt. Pepper was done at a time where the Beatles wanted to go into the studios and use the studio as a playground, if you like. And so they vary sped, which means they change the pitch of the tape.
So they might slow down the record machine to make it, when they played it back at normal speed, to be higher in pitch?
Correct. So if you take, I'll play another example, actually. If you take Lovely Rita, now the stereo version of Lovely Rita, now this is interesting because Paul's actually voice is sped up. They slowed down the music, and he sang it, and then they put it back to the right pitch, and he's now sped up. So, and same with When I'm 64, so he sounded younger, even though he was only 25. He's younger than 25. But in the stereo, everything is on the left-hand side, and then the voice and bass comes on the right-hand side. And that's because my father had to bounce the four-track down onto one track, and that's for the left-hand speaker, and the bass was separate. So now with the new mix, suddenly it opens out, and it's coming in, you can hear it in both ears.
You know, I thought that when stereo started coming, and I was buying records back then, and you'd get a stereo record, it was novel and cool that the band's voices were coming out of the right side and the drums were coming out of the left side. It doesn't hold up well over time, but at the time, it felt like, that's really cool.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's pretty cool, but the problem is that in the day of, you know, the world has changed now. The world has changed where it's become this global jukebox. You know, people can listen to whatever they want, whenever they want. And if suddenly a track is quieter or the voice moves miles away, you know, a person who's never, you know, we have to think about this. This is for people who've never heard Sgt. Pepper before as well. You know, we're comparing it to, but a lot of people, we remixed Strawberry Fields and the tape op,
which was recorded, for those who don't know, in this early part of the beginning of Sgt. Pepper, but came out as a 45 instead of being
correct.
On the
album. And so the mix assistant had never heard Strawberry Fields before. He's 23 years old. He never heard it. So it's for that reason. You don't have to put it on. It's such a, you know. The Beatles are a band that you can dig deep and you can expose their playing, and they were great players. It's like, you know, if you imagine a delicious cake being made up of ingredients and you separate the ingredients, every single part of that cake, it tastes delicious. And so you can, by remixing it, you can actually expose what a great drummer Ringo was. You know, Paul's bass playing is, you know, there's a vibrancy to Sgt. Pepper that by stripping it back, you suddenly hear.
What other examples might you have?
Well, just sheer weight of you know, one of the criticisms of the stereo of Sgt. Pepper was the original stereo was you couldn't hear Ringo. You know, now we can have kick drum. You know, because if you think about that time in 67, there's a protection that goes on with records then. You didn't want the needle to jump out of the groove. You didn't want to be too, you know, you had
literally.
To be, yeah, you, literally.
Literally
you,
would
you,
jump
you,
out of the groove if you it was could, too bottomy.
You had to watch dynamics. And now, you know, even with vinyl, we've done a great vinyl cut of this, which is we did half speed. So it's a much more precise cut. You know, we still use the same techniques, we just developed them. So this is the original stereo mix of Sgt. Pepper. And this is actually the remaster that came out. And it's iconic, it's great. But there's almost a veil in front of the band and the listener. So the new mix, what we're doing actually, we're taking off layers.
By going back a generation.
By going back a generation. So suddenly you have this.
There's real thump in the bottom end.
Yeah,
there.
there's now. And you know, the Beatles dug in. And that's the thing. It's the excitement that gets you can get across. You can never get across on a record, which happened then. But it happened then because no one had ever heard it before.
Right.
It's been a real challenge because you're challenged by this weight of expectation. But the joy is actually just finding, you know, how great Jeff Emmerich's engineering was, you know, how great my dad was as a producer, how organized the recordings are, and you know, the beauty of the arrangements. And more than that, how great the Beatles were at playing.
What are some of the notes that you, I mean, you're going through all these papers and notes that your dad had written. What are the sorts of things that were there?
Well, there's a lot of very speed notes.
So, in other words, saying that adjusted the speed of the tape here and there.
Correct. So adjusting the speed of the tape, if you take it back to Lovely Rita, each variation of the bounce was bounced at a different speed. And that's on the tape box. And so we have to follow that. You know, we have to. And so what actually happens, I mean, this is still done. It's still done at Abbey Road on the same equipment.
Wow.
What we have to do is we take the four tracks and literally we sync them up together by pressing play at the same time and changing the speed of one machine. That's how it's done. I mean, it's laborious. And we do it so there's a thing called phasing where they're completely locked in. And we have to go back and adjust, and that's how we create these. And so we essentially can create a much bigger multi-track recording than they mixed up. We have more choices than they had in those days. And part of the thought behind it, I mean, if we take Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, for instance, the mono of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds has a thing called, well, which John loved, which is ADT, artificial double tracking, whereby you send a signal of something, in this case the voice, or in this case maybe the whole mix, into a tape machine. And the record head and playback heads, with changing the pitch, they chorus and they have a double track effect.
Because there's a distance of an inch or two between the
record
head and the
tape. And that distance will change because of the speed of, well, the distance will stay the same, but the speed of the tape will change the effect. So on the mono of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, which I'll play now, there's a lot of what's ADT. You'll hear the phasing effect. Which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Now, on the stereo, they couldn't do that. So the stereo is always very dry. His voice is much clearer, but you have to think, you know, we have to think, that's not what John would have wanted. You know, what he wanted is that effect. And so we now actually, I now found a way of getting the keyboard to move across between your ears. There's more space. But actually, we added the ADT, same techniques, the same tape machine to John's voice. So we now have a stereo version of the mono, if you like, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the motivation behind that is we sort of think, you know, not really arrogantly, out of respect, what would they want if they're in the room?
Right.
You know, that's the way. It sounds a silly thing to say, but I grew up with my dad, and because of his hearing loss, I became his ears, and we spent so much time together that I kind of know what he would have liked.
Yeah.
I can't ever presume to know what the Beatles would have wanted. Actually, neither would have he had done. But you kind of have to guess listening to the mono mixes.
It may have been one thing one day, and another thing another.
Right.
Exactly.
Probably.
Yes. There must have been tools of this day that you used to clean or EQ or any of that?
Yeah, we have. Listen, we have. And the great thing about, you know, and the reason why we should do this mix at Abbey Road is because we have exactly the same machines and exactly the same desks that they had at our disposal. But we also have, you know, modern day anything we want. And to the extent where actually I worked on the Hollywood Bowl album last year and on Ron Howard's film. And we actually developed software for that to remove screams and demixing software. And sometimes we'll try and demix the one. So if you take Sgt. Pepper's Reprise, for instance, that has guitar, organ, and drums all on one track. And so you know, if you want, we want to keep that in the center because it's much more powerful, like the mono, and not stick off in the left-hand speaker or the right-hand speaker. And so we work at, can we take the organ and put it off to the left-hand side slightly to create a sort of stereo field? And we did that, you know. Mm-hmm. That is where we actually do no harm comes to mind, because there's no point doing anything. You know, there was a period in recording and mixing where material was cleaned up, and to me it sounds worse. You know, I like the dirt, I like the reality, and so we use modern technology, but we're careful.
I think that's where the idea that did I perhaps piss you off when I remix this record? You may get people expecting or thinking that this might not be very good. Like, what are we doing to my favorite record?
Well, I'm not deleting it for a start.
Though I will ask you, in 50 years from now, and whatever kind of thing you're going to listen to on, what version's going to be the predominant version?
I think as long as people are listening, then it doesn't matter.
Okay.
I think that's the and I suppose we're not trying to mix the definitive version of Pepper, because you know, the band aren't here now.
Has Paul heard this?
Paul, yeah, of course. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't be here talking to you, because they're right. My bosses. Yeah, you know, that's the, you know.
Did he have some, surprise, like, not, like, because you hear things, at least I do, and I've listened to this record more than any other record in my life, and so I hear things that I hadn't heard before. They're subtle. They're just, you hear the bow on the strings. In Within You, Without You, you really feel that drone.
Yeah, and the relative levels are still the same. We just had the advantage of using earlier tapes. It's a weird thing to think that, wait a second, this is a new mix, but actually we're using tapes that have never been used before because they had to be bounced, if that makes sense.
Not that.
And I think, you know, I mean, Paul loved it. You know, he loved hearing, because he remembers playing it. And that's the thing about, you know, Sgt. Pepper's known as this sort of iconic psychedelic album that's, you know, created from the gods, but it's not, it's the four of them in the studios. And that's, I think, what comes across in the mix.
Well, and your dad.
And my dad, absolutely. My dad also worked like a sort of funnel or a satellite dish, channeling their ideas onto this small
and performing
disc.
Song.
Absolutely. And here's the thing, as you think about the thing about the mono is that you're condensing sound down to a very small space, and when you open it, it actually can become less psychedelic. On Benefit Mr. Kite, you think of that being a huge circus. On the verses are just Paul playing bass live, Ringo playing drums, my dad playing harmonium, and John singing. You know, and same with Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, it's just Paul playing, you know, keyboards and John singing and there's bass. You know, you imagine this sort of huge sonic tapestry, but it's not that. But what it is, it is, as an album, it flows so well. There's so many changes that your mind is tricked that you're going on different journeys all the time.
Well, talking about sonic adventures and journeys, can we talk about what is my favorite song on planet Earth, and the last piece of music on the record, A Day in the Life? Can you play for me differences and
because
that was a complicated, they're bouncing strings on top of strings, right?
Well, A Day in the Life actually is interesting. It's not as complicated as you think as a recording.
Tell me.
Because it was done, it's a four track. The first on track one is John's acoustic guitar, Paul playing piano, maracas and congas.
Right, but that guitar is panned hard one side.
And that's because, you know, if you put the voice in the center, the other way is you have a mono.
Yeah.
If you think about and then the drums and bass are overlaid together at the same time on another track. And then the strings were recorded in four takes and bounced down, and that's the fourth track.
So did you go back to the original?
We have stereo bounced four tracks. So we went back to the original take of the strings. And so we have a much more dynamic string take, because we don't have to compress it so much, and so it's more exciting. But A Day in Life was the challenge, actually, funny, because the mono has a character to it that only monos can have. And the character is, I'll play an example.
Okay.
It's really with the drums. When Ringo's drum fill comes in the mono,
not the shaker, but the
drum fill. It's like an explosion.
He blew his mind out in a car.
It almost gets too loud and takes over the song. That's
at in that point in my life, I'd never heard a drum do that.
I don't think anyone had.
Yeah. So then we go to stereo, old stereo,
which is where the voice is hard right to begin with. About a lucky man who made the grade. And though the news was rather sad, well, I just had to laugh. And so we now,
we're going to hear the drums, though. That's
we'll hear the drums, yeah. He blew his
mind out in a car. Yeah, not as dynamic.
Not as dynamic, not as much impact. And the reason why is because they are... They're not... It's not come out of... They're not taking over from the whole mix. So we tried. And we got pretty close to the mono. The rest of the track, John's voice, the bass is deeper. There's much more precision. It sounds, the new mix sounds. Well, I just had to laugh. I saw the photograph. He blew his mind out in a car. Didn't notice that. You know, it's interesting because overall John's voice is beautiful and we use the same we dug out the same, you know, compressors and, you know, the same
that's
techniques.
Amazing.
It's a real challenge, and you know, this sort of mix process is born out of complete respect for the work that, you know, Jeff Emmerich and my father did. More than anything else.
Can you play, and this is perfect to go out on, play for me, go from the climax of the strings and the piano, like the last piano chord, which is kind of remarkable on this new version, that the final chord. Can you play, just walk me through mono, stereo, and then we'll go out and just end on the crescendo? Is that possible?
Yes, I'll do my best.
Okay.
So I'll start with the mono string climax. Here we are. I'll switch to the stereo. And now I'll switch to our new mix.
So there's an underpinning sound that is much clearer here, which I just always thought was the piano, but it's either a bow or there's something else going on there.
It's like a combination of a whirly or a farfisa, low
an
down.
Organ,
yes,
really?
it's electric organ. But you know, one of the things we've done for this remix and this box set is actually go through and find extras. And what the fun thing I found was the original session when they were recording the piano.
Oh.
Which I'll play you now.
And who is playing this piano?
So this is Paul, John, Mal.
Which one's that?
The right hand one. Far right.
Go on.
Far right. It makes an echo on. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
if
you keep that on for the start, keep that on all the way to the play.
Check one.
All right, on four. One.
Two, three.
Take two. Stand by.
Okay. One, two, three. No, well, I won't say four. Just imagine.
Yeah, I mean,
four.
I was doing the other.
One, two, three. Four. One, two, three.
And so it goes, and in the last
so
one,
I think that's three or four of them
playing grand pianos at the same time.
So six hands there.
Six hands.
The same grand piano.
No, three pianos.
Oh, three pianos.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
And then if I play the last which
yeah.
is the four tracks together
okay.
on this, because it's a rough mix,
yeah.
you'll hear the electric.
Oh.
One, two, three.
The rumble, there it is.
I didn't know there were that many hands in that.
Yeah, yeah. That's but previously, because a Day in the Life, they finished with the string crescendo hanging, knew they wanted to resolve on E chord. Originally, they tried to record a choir.
Wow.
Well, they tried to record their own choir, which is this. This is the session from this.
A Day in the Life. This is take 8, and it's the choir for the end.
Choir.
Eight, okay, eight beats then, just like count eight. As soon as you say, right, just stop on it. The eight. And I'm going to try and remember.
You lead it.
Come on, we'll all subconsciously
okay.
Okay.
Follow my leader.
Right. What's the note then, girl? Shall we just all check? One, two. Great.
And you can see why they didn't. You can see why they didn't.
That wouldn't have lasted 50
yeah,
years.
No. Yeah. So you know. That's the fun thing is you know, art is made out of performance and decisions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
right.
there's a decision that was made for the good.
When you went through all of these, and I don't know what you're going through.
The original
quarter
track
inch.
Tapes. They're 1-inch 4-track tapes.
What are you learning about the character of these people? You were born in 1969, so you were born a couple of years after the record's made. You've gotten to know Paul and Ringo. I don't know how well you knew George.
Yeah, I did know. I met George when I was a kid. I worked on. I worked for a year actually on the Martin Scorsese film. I did all the music for that, so I know Olivia Harrison very well, and I spent enough time with. I kind of know George from his work.
But what do you know of now of these 20-something-year-old musicians? What did you learn gleaning through these tapes and about the character, decision-making, joking?
Well, I think Sgt. Pepper is the pinnacle of them working as a four. You know, it was Paul's idea and Paul's drive behind Pepper, but there's a unity to it, and there was unity of my father as well. It did that changed after they went to India, and you know, it's well documented. But this Pepper is the perfect bridge between them being a pop band and going, okay, we don't want to be, and making music that they just wanted to make that they thought would change things. And I suppose what I learned about the four of them is that how surprised I am at what they did at their age. You know, take With and You Without You. Now, I think George is 24 or 25, and he's a guy from, he's 24, and he's a kid from a really, really a poor background in Liverpool, and he's making an Indian record at the age of 24.
With not many lessons. I mean, he
just come back from India.
It's just
unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think it's that. It's just they live their life in some sort of crazy fast forward artistically. And always created and never stopped.
And had somebody very talented, your dad, to capture.
And my dad was so important to them because, you know, he was a focal point and reflected on them and inspired them because he instilled them the belief they could do anything they wanted in the studios. And it's that blank canvas that creates these incredible sound pictures that's Sgt. Pepper. And on top of that, it's the beauty of working on this is a recording is a record. It's that time frozen. It may be 50 years ago, but they are still 24 and 25, and they sound like it on the record, and you hear the beauty of their playing, and that hasn't changed. That has not changed. And if anything, you can now hear it clearer.
That's great. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh,
and for
me.
Doing this, the big picture.
Well, I'm pleased you're not annoyed with me.
I am not. I've been listening a couple of times now to this record, and it really is a thrill to hear this again. And I feel grateful for having been able to experience this in my life. So thanks.
Oh, well, thank you
it
so much.
It means a lot.
Thanks, Bob.
Cheers.